the facts. If you man enough, come stand with us, take USA back. And every time we pull up, all you're gonna see is American flags.
Welcome to the Patriots Prayer Podcast, where we dive deep into the core values that have sculpted the foundation of our great nation. Today, we're thrilled to have with us Jameson Ellis, a fervent advocate for the timeless principles that the United States has stood for since its inception. In a time when the very fabric of our society is under scrutiny, Jameson's courageous stand against the encroaching shadows of Marxism is a beacon of hope for many. This is a critical juncture for our country, a moment when the sanctity of the family unit, the bedrock of civilization, faces unprecedented threats from ideologies that seek to dismantle the nuclear family. The insidious influence that these beliefs, often propagated by elements within such groups as the Democratic Socialists of America, is not just a fringe concern, but a palpable force that challenges our way of life. It's disconcerting to witness the individuals who bear the conservative banner, yet their actions and decisions starkly contradict the very ethos they claim to uphold. It's a reminder that the words are fleeting, that they say, but their actions resonate through the annals of time. In this pivotal episode, we delve into the essence of what it means to be a republic, a nation governed by laws, not by the whims of a very few powerful people. We stand at the crossroads witnessing legislation like AB 665 in California or NY 213 in New York, which could erode the liberties we hold so dear, reminiscent of the unsettling haste with which the Patriot Act was passed after 9/11 in the middle of the night with no one reading it. Our discussion with Jameson Ellis today is more than just a conversation. It's a clarion call for a resurgence of principled governance, where elected officials are the steadfast representatives of the people's will and not the amplifier of special interest groups. They clamor for term limits in Congress, yet yearning for a government that embodies the aspiration of its constituents and the imperative for public service to be a calling and not a career. These are the ideas that Jameson embodies in his unwavering commitment to the cause. As we navigate these turbulent times, let us remember that our elected leaders, are the custodians of our collective destiny, tasked with the sacred duty not to serve the special interest groups or be idolized like their celebrities, but be the representative governance where the voices of the people are not just heard, but heeded. Join us in this compelling journey with Jameson as we reaffirm our commitment to the enduring values that define us, the resilience of the United States, and the patriotism that inspires us to envision a brighter future for America. Patriots, with that, I welcome Jameson Ellis to the Patriots Prayer Podcast.
There it is.
Well, I am kind of shocked by that intro. You actually set the bar pretty high, so I hope I can live up to to those standards.
You know, the thing that stuck out to me in a conversation that we had was exactly what I said there in that opening. It was like, you know, the elected officials work for us. They're, you know, they're not your buddies. They're not celebrities. They're not that. That conversation that resonated with me. And I think people really do need to remember that, because I take, you know, in myself a lot of blame for the things that happen in my community. And I think collectively as people that we should all, because most people, when you talk to them, they don't know who their representatives are. Who's on your school board? Who's on your city council? Who they don't know. They have no idea. They just complain about everything that's wrong. they don't know how to get involved. You know, civic duty and responsibility and those obligatory things when it comes to government that you play a part in go right over their head, but they have a lot to say on the other side of it, even the ones that don't vote.
Yeah. So. Well, and I was going to say it's to a degree, it's impossible to know all of your representatives. Right. And, you know, one of the things I try to encourage people is, you know, find out where it is that God is calling you to and serve there and plug in there. Because if you try to do everything and you try to know everything, take it from somebody who has run for Congress twice now, that's going to be running again in 2 years, it's almost impossible to know everything and to learn everything. And even me, I haven't gotten it all figured out. And so hopefully that's an encouragement to some of your viewers here. Mm-hmm.
You know, I believe that this is one of the reasons why community is so important. Why going and seeing your friends, your family, and speaking to them about these vital issues that our country currently faces, and actually being able to, I mean, when I was growing up, it was always like politics weren't supposed to be discussed at the table, right?
Yeah, politics nor religion.
Yeah. And these are like very critical points that need to be hashed out between family and community.
And it's led to a grave misunderstanding of both.
So Jameson, you got Rachel here just asking you to give her a quick hello. She says she's been following you for several months. She's saying to get Crenshaw out! Exclamation point.
Hi, Rachel. No, I definitely appreciate that. And let me just say, well, first let me address the elephant in the room. No pun intended. Not that big, there. So just so that there's no confusion. So I have a camera right here in front of me and I've got two screens. So I'm having a conversation here. I'm looking over here. And so if your audience thinks I'm ignoring them because I'm not staring directly at the camera, that's not really the case. I'm just trying to have a conversation because sometimes it gets so weird being in front of the camera and you're having a conversation, but you're staring off into blank and like just blankness looking at the camera. You can't see microfacial expressions. All you can do is hear the tone of voice and hear what's being said. And out of the corner of your eye, you can see movement. But so I hope it's okay with everybody this go around. I'm going to look over here so that we can actually have a conversation.
Yeah, I have the camera strategically placed right in front of my face on the screen, so that way I can only see you two, and you know, I don't have to be worried about the way I look or anything like that. But I'm still able to see you guys without looking too far off screen. So, I'm getting it down.
Yeah, guys, you know, I've followed the news over the last week or so very closely as normal. We've talked a lot about what was going on with this eclipse and that sort of thing. And we didn't know what the hell was going to happen. We knew that the probability of somebody using this to their own benefit because everyone was expecting something was high. It was high, but I'm glad that it thus far has been an uneventful day. Let's hope it stays that way. But with the encroachment of just mass immigration, illegal immigration at our border, the likelihood of future events or something actually taking place is quite high. In fact, I would go so far as to say that if you're Iran, if you're Russia, if you're Afghanistan, if you're any one of our adversarial countries, including China and the like, that are not sending people into the United States right now to go after your enemy, you're somewhat stupid. I mean, if you're fighting us, If we are your enemy, if that's how you see us, you'd be kind of dumb at this point not to be sending people over, not to be putting people into positions with this government that seems to just have its, you know, head up its, you know, rectum and not paying any attention to what's going on. Or they are, you know, and you have a lot of useful idiots out there that are, you know, marching down the street and, you know, applauding their own destruction and they don't even realize. They have no idea that things they're advocating for is their own demise. But what say you about any of the, you're closer than any of us. Well, I'm there a little bit. I'm in Nevada. I see it, but not as much as you in Texas. I mean, what do you see?
Well, I mean, so where I live here in Montgomery County, I'm not that far away, maybe 18 miles or so away from Colony Ridge, which is the massive colonia that's being built in Liberty County. But it's literally pressed up against the borders of Liberty, Montgomery, and Harris counties. And it's scary. I mean, you have a community over there that's completely gone to crap. And it's basically like a refugee camp out there. I mean, honestly, if you were to be here 15, 20 years ago, Cleveland. So Cleveland's just north of Splendora. And I know I'm probably saying a lot of towns that nobody knows, but here in the greater Houston area on the far northeast side, right up 59, you have a little town called Splendora. Well, just north of that, you have a town called Cleveland. Cleveland, Texas used to be just purebred redneck, you know, and right now their school districts are being overwhelmed by the influx of illegals or criminal aliens that have moved into Colony Ridge. And what's crazy is the majority of those that have moved into Colony Ridge actually came from Houston. So that's even crazier. But yeah, I mean, right here in Texas, man, we're seeing it. We're seeing the invasion along our southern border and feeling it a lot differently than other states. And, you know, I've been to the border several times. I've seen the remnants, or the remains rather, of sex trafficking, of, you know, I mean, I've seen the rape trees. I've seen where kids.
Hold on, slow down. What was that? I apologize. Back a second. The rape trees?
Yeah. So a rape tree is basically where a child's underwear is hung on the tree as kind of a trophy after that child has been violated by the traffickers.
Never heard of this.
Yeah. A lot of people haven't. I've seen where they have herded these kids together, and you see backpacks, clothes, all of that just kind of strewn all over the place. And you can see where they might have sat and waited to be picked up. It's horrible. It's absolutely crazy. And the fact now that our tax dollars are actually going to fund this stuff. Whenever I was on Tim Pool, we actually talked about this. Mm-hmm. Our tax dollars are being used to fund it. That's unacceptable, because now indirectly the American people have been made complicit in the trafficking of women and children. Our government has been complicit in a while, or for a while. So yeah, it's absolutely horrible. And the fact that my opponent seems to not care to do anything about it, he's a lot of lip service, but not really anything else. The fact that this administration doesn't actually welcomes it. The fact that we have a governor here in the state of Texas that thinks it's funny to send illegals further into the country that they invaded in the first place. And we're just rewarding them. Like, these are criminals. You've committed a crime. You've come over here illegally. So here's what we do. We bust them up for free, and we bust them further into the country, where then they can be harvested for Democrat votes.
Let me ask you a question about that, though. Two questions real quick, and answer them in any order you want. So we know that Joe Biden changed the criteria for how they handle the unaccompanied minors to come into the country. There used to be a DNA test involved, and there used to be a lot more rigorous checks into who they handed the children off to once they got this side of the border. We were told that all that red tape was removed by the Biden administration. They don't do that anymore. And that people in the border control that were the social, you know, worker arm or whatever that was dealing with this part of it, that a lot of them walked away from their jobs saying they couldn't in good conscience just hand children over to people they didn't know who they were. And the number is alarming. The last number I heard them say was like 86,000. But at that point, it was only for that year. So I don't know what that number looks like now. I mean, did you hear any of this? And
No, I mean, so, I mean, here's the other thing too, is that I don't expect them to follow the law. I don't expect them to do what they're supposed to do. If they did, then they wouldn't be in violation of Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution. We would have a secure border. The state of Texas would be free to be able to secure its own border if need be. And as it is right now, the one thing that I'll say is that, you know, I don't mean to rag on Governor Abbott all the time. There's some things that he does that's great. Half the time, though, I feel like he's just telling us what we want to hear than working against us behind the scenes. But at least he's seems to be doing more now. But my question is, how long is that really going to last? But they don't follow their own rules, right? That's the problem. What's the point in creating legislation if we're not even going to follow the legislation and the laws that are already on the books, right? This is the biggest problem with I have with our government. You know, we're supposed to be a government that is limited. But what do? We expand that government by creating laws that are unnecessary. So we don't need more laws to secure the border. We need the government to follow the damn Constitution. We need the government to actually enforce Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution, not stack legislation to seemingly protect a law that's already been made. If we don't follow the laws that are already on the books, what expects anybody to follow any new legislation that we might write?
Yeah, and that's usually what they do to amp people up, to get them to vote for new bills, because they don't follow the old laws. People just think we need more laws when, in fact, we just need to follow what's there. Now, the next question was this. I know that Texas has an arrangement with the United States, the federal government as a whole, that's different from the rest of the country. In fact, with the agreement, the way that I understand it, you guys have built into that agreement with the federal government the right to protect your own border yourself without the involvement or the necessary the approval of the federal government, and they're not allowed to violate that as a result either.
That's not just the state of Texas. That's every state in the union constitutionally has the ability to do that. Any state in the union, it doesn't matter if you're a border state or not, every state in the union has the right to invoke Article 1, Section 10, Clause 3 of the Constitution. So all of these states that Abbott is sending these illegals to, they have a right to declare an invasion too if they weren't Democrat led.
Right.
But here's the thing, man. The Constitution doesn't just apply to the state of Texas when it comes to the border crisis. It is every state in this union. And so this idea that we have some special relationship with the federal government, we're 1/50th. All 50 states have that same agreement. It's the U.S. Constitution.
And that's one of the reasons why it's so surprising that you guys are getting highlighted so much just for wanting to defend your state. You know, I mean, there should be multiple states coming out and saying, I mean, what Abbott did with sending illegals throughout the country, there were a lot of people online, the kind of sentiment was, oh, they're going to own the libs by doing this. The problem is exactly what you said earlier, in that he was literally making the problem worse. He was facilitating the problem. He was enabling the problem. And then now when election year comes around, he's like, oh, I'm going to make this tough stand and show that, you know, I'm going to do what my voters want. But it's like, we've been screaming for this for years now, but now all of a sudden, now it's time to act because an election's right around the corner. So it always feels like these politicians, like Governor Abbott, are in a constant state of campaigning, right? Where they're not actually doing anything to make a change or for the right reasons. It is just that they're doing it so they can secure the next election and get back into office, rather than having this sense of duty, like what you felt in order to run against Dan Crenshaw. You, as a regular everyday citizen, decided that, well, I mean, I guess I could let you tell that story, but you felt a sense of duty to serve your country, to serve your community, not to, like, you didn't just want to get into Congress to make more money or whatever it may be. You actually felt that sense of duty. So I did want to hear your story a little bit about why you decided to go up against Crenshaw and how big of an obstacle that really was.
Yeah, I mean, do you want the short version or the or the long extended version.
Well, so, let's find a happy medium with that one.
We'll try. Yeah. So, I mean, in a nutshell, that for me, this goes back to 2020. So this was during the summer of love, during the lockdowns. But I was with an organization. I was actually contracting with an organization called Bridge the Blue. I was their creative director. And, as soon as the George Floyd thing happened, you know, we saw an uptick in of course riots, so-called peaceful protests. And so we were going live on Facebook and we were doing what we call the Blue Crew Live. And during that Blue Crew Live, and I remember the time and the place. So we were specifically talking about how Austin had defunded its police department by a third of its budget, which is $150 million. And it was in that I heard this voice that said, run for Congress. And I was like, run for Congress. Like, you know, I thought that was a fleeting thought. Maybe, you know, maybe it was the devil. So I'm like, get thee behind me, Satan, because I'm like, me, run for Congress. I'm not a politician. And honestly, what went through my head is I ain't wearing no suit. I ain't dressing like that. I ain't acting like that. I ain't going to be something that I'm not.
Put your damn bolo tie on and head to bed.
I just tossed it off. Like, didn't really give it much thought. I'm like, no, I mean, that's God's got a sense of humor if that was really him. Well, 2 weeks later, I get a message. You know how on Facebook, on Messenger, and I'm not on Facebook a whole lot on my profile. I'm always on my page. But on Messenger, they used to have the other folder. And ultimately what happened was I checked my other folder and I had this message from this gal out of Wichita Falls. In a nutshell, she basically tells me that she was praying and God showed her me in Congress. We hopped on the phone because I was like, I didn't tell anybody. I didn't tell my wife, didn't tell my folks, didn't tell anybody. Mm-hmm. And she just told me, she was like, you haven't even told anybody. She knew that I hadn't told anybody. And it really freaked me out in a really good way. That night I told my wife, and she kind of had the same reaction that I did. Like, you run for Congress. And I'm like, I know, right? It's kind of, it sounds mad. So I just basically told God, I said, look, if this is really you, which it seems like it is, then I'm going to trust you to open the door. Several months later, and this was like, I want to say 6 to 9 months roughly later, it was May of 2021. My buddy John calls me up and I'll save you the details of that conversation. But what I found out in the conversation is that Kevin Brady, who was the sitting congressman of the district that I lived in at that time, was retiring. And so there was going to be an open seat. And so as soon as I found that out, I felt like it was my time. At the very beginning, first day, when I made the decision that I was going to run, it was scary because I'm like, I don't know the first thing about campaigning. I don't know how to campaign. I had been pretty apolitical, since Ron Paul got screwed back in 2012. And I was a big Ron Paul guy. Whenever Trump ran in 2016, you know, I engaged enough just to vote for Trump in the general. But then, times were good, right? So I was disengaged from politics. I was focused on trying to pay bills and trying to grow and trying to run a business and all that stuff. And then 2020 happened. So basically, you know, we wound up campaigning in District 8 for about 6 months. And then in November, we find out, this is November of 2021, we find out that the district lines had switched on us because Texas added two new congressional districts. So, you know, whenever you add anything to something that already exists, you have to make room, right? So the district lines shifted and we live in the same house, but we no longer live in District 8, now live in District 2. So I had to make a decision. Am I going to continue running for the district that I've just spent the last 6 months campaigning in, albeit I no longer live in that district, or am I going to choose to run against Dan Crenshaw in the new district that I find myself in? I chose, obviously, the latter because I'm a man of principle, and I believe that if you're going to run to represent a district, you need to live in that district. It ought to be the district that you live in. So I didn't set out initially to run against Dan Crenshaw, but honestly, that's whenever things really picked up, and I didn't realize how badly hated Dan Crenshaw really was. I had to educate myself on his voting record. We had 3 months to campaign, only raised $45,000, and we took between 17 and 18% of the vote. I never really stopped campaigning, but the way that I campaign is a little bit different. I don't campaign the way that most politicians do. I campaign by serving. Sometimes it's behind the scenes. Sometimes it's actually what has been lately is just putting on events where we're serving veterans. We're advocating for our Texas owned businesses, and we're just trying to inspire patriotism. In that process, I also became a Constitution coach with the Patriot Academy, been taking people through classes like Constitution Alive and Biblical Citizenship in Modern America, trying to teach people at a 60,000 foot view the Constitution so that they could recognize the real thing. They know the real thing so much whenever a counterfeit comes across their path, they're able to recognize it like that, the same way that bankers get trained.
That's something absolutely lacking in our public school system today.
100%.
Having people understand the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence. I mean, that's, it's mentioned in school, but it's not taught. I mean, that what you're doing should be taught in schools where kids actually understand where our rights stem from, why we're a unique and special country, and how we're going to be able to move forward. So,
it's supposed to be. So Benjamin Rush, who was the founding father of public schools under the Constitution, he had basically said that public schools exist to do three things: is to teach kids to love and serve God, to love and serve their country, and to love and serve their family. And in that order, by the way, God first, then country, and then family. And the reason why Rush said that he put country before family is he said, if we ever lose control of our country, it will become the great enemy of our family. And honestly, that's what we're seeing all over the country right now, from the courts and the classrooms and Congress, all the way to our small family-owned businesses and our southern border. And, you know, what I've been trying to tell people is I believe that it's that we need to go on the offense, and it's going to take a rebellious outsider that's willing to go on the offense. Because what I've actually learned is that, you know, whenever I played football, our coaches used to tell us all the time that offense wins games, defense wins championships. Well, I call BS on that. No, it's offense that wins games. Defense just tries not to lose. And for far too long, the political class have been gaslighting the American people into forgetting one of the most paramount phrases and principles taken directly out of the Declaration of Independence that says that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That's us. That's we the people. And so now we no longer live in a day and age where we feel like we are supposed to be in control of the government, where we grant government to the power as we see fit. Mm-hmm. Now we think that, well, we elect leaders and those leaders lead the country. No, we're the leaders. Mm-hmm. And so I tell people, and during this 2024 campaign, I stood in front of countless people and I told them, look, don't look at me and think that you're honored to be in my presence. Don't treat me like a celebrity. Don't treat me like I'm special, because at the end of the day, I'm not running to be your leader. I'm not running to be your savior. I'm not running to be your pastor. I'm running to be your employee. I am running to be your representative. And the biggest problem that I have right now with the American people is the American people treat our elected officials as if they're some honored leaders, and they're not. They're our representatives, and they're supposed to operate under our consent, but they don't do that. So my message this entire time has been about more liberty, less government. You're the boss. What is it that you need me to do? You have a voice. I'm going to go to Washington and make sure that it's heard and make sure that you're represented. And I'm going to fight. I'm not going to go along to get along. Why is it that conservatives are always the ones that are expected to meet in the middle, or we're the ones that are expected to compromise? I'm sick of it always being the conservatives that compromise. It's time for us to have a Congress and have conservatives in Congress that are no compromise and that are willing to work to make sure that if we do compromise, that it's not real compromise. It's good negotiation that ensures let me give you an example. If I'm trying to work out a deal with somebody and my goal is say $10,000, right? That's the minimum I want to take for said product or service. I'm going to start high. You know what? I'm going to start at like 30,000, and you're going to negotiate my, and as long as we don't get to my base, I've won, because what I really only wanted out of it was 10 grand. Why don't we have conservatives that have those types of skill sets that are willing to ask something so ginormous that the Democrats are like, whoa, 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 we can't do that. But in all reality, all we're trying to do is to do X, Y, and Z, not the entire alphabet, right?
So part of the deal.
We have people in Congress that don't know how to freaking negotiate. And it really pisses me off. And then what happens is the conservatives wind up compromising and the left wins.
Well, the conservatives are so scared of looking like radicals because, I mean, conservatives are generally driven by necessity. That's why you felt the need to run. But I think the Republicans in Congress, they don't have that same drive and passion, it seems. I mean, they've really been working behind the scenes to screw us over, and it's almost like they've been the controlled opposition for a long time, right? Something to please the people enough that, like, no, we're actually putting up a fight for you. We actually want these things too, but we're not really going to do anything about it. I mean, even Trump, I had a conversation with a guy today over X about, I mean, Trump's policies haven't really changed from the 90s. I mean, the things that he's asking for are like very basic things. I see Trump as a moderate. You know, there's going to be a lot more people that come after him that are going to be a lot more radical or extreme in these positions. So, I mean, building a wall that used to be a universal, you know, thing.
It was a Bill Clinton idea. That was
his. Yeah.
It was his idea.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying. He was a 90s Democrat. That's like what he's advocating for now. But the fact that they don't want to seem like they're extreme or radical, it's like the press has gotten so good at getting these people to bend the knee just by threat of telling everybody how extreme they are. And it's absolutely insane. But you know who was extreme? The founding fathers. Those guys were radical. You know,
yeah,
they had these radical ideas.
They pledged to each other their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor for the cause of liberty. And I have committed and I have resolved within myself at this point. I'm 41 years old. I have resolved within myself to do no less. You know, and to speak to exactly what you're saying there is that the problem right now with our two-party system, which I hate, I'm not a party loyalist, right? I'm a constitutionalist. And so, but the Democrat and Republican parties, as they sit now, have moved so far to the left that now the Constitution is seen as a far right ideological document. And so to be a Jeffersonian Republican, more so a Jeffersonian Republican, which is what I consider myself to be, I 100% advocate for a strong, strong adherence and original intent interpretation of the Constitution. And in order to do that, you cannot separate the Constitution from the Declaration of Independence, because the Constitution is built upon the framework of the Declaration. And let me put it this way. In business terms, the Declaration of Independence would be the Articles of Incorporation, and the Constitution are the bylaws that actually govern how the corporation is supposed to be ran. So you cannot separate the two. And so if you really want to get into the mindset of our founding fathers and the original intent behind why they wrote the Constitution, you have to read and study the Declaration first. And I would, I venture to say, and I encourage people to even go beyond that, read the writings that inspired Thomas Jefferson whenever he wrote the Declaration, and why all of the people that signed the Declaration, what were they reading? What were they subscribing to at the time? What were they in the middle of, right? What was going on at that time? What were the 27 grievances found in the Declaration, right? What was going on in their minds when they wrote that to then lead to the Constitution ultimately, and which is supposed to be governing our country today? I think that we'll see a lot of parallels, but some of the differences are, is that the war that we're fighting right now is more of a spiritual and a cultural war than it is a physical war with someone like England, yep. But or Britain. But the principles are the same.
Yeah, I say all the time, if for those that are waiting for the revolution to start, you're late. We're in the middle of it. You're looking at it. This is a culture war that we're fighting. But yeah, you know, the thing that the left is very good at is rephrasing things to trick people into fighting for what seemingly on their surface are good causes. But they use our sympathy and our empathy against us. And then when you look at what they're really doing a little closer, you'll see an element of your freedom being taken away by them doing something, by, you know, relabeling it as a good thing. They just repackage it. And it's like, well, all these dead kids, and we need to get rid of, you know, the assault rifles and this and that. And they frame it like that. But then there's a whole nother reason why the Second Amendment says there shall be no law made. The left is the party of, you know, when we look at something, we can see it black and white, no gray. It's very on the surface, is what it is. But they like to, you know, well, what that really means is this. And then they start redefining everything and, you know, and using those types of tactics. When you're just honest and what you're saying is true and good and real, you don't need to do all that. On the surface, when we're looking at something and we see it, it is exactly what we see. When we see that they don't let pastors go into the classroom of a young, you know, first grade, second grade, whatever it is, school in general, they won't, but they will let a tranny time, you know, reading to your kids, and they'll bring that in there and they'll allow that to happen. Where I see that is a value and a belief that you're now exposing my child to, but you didn't want to expose them to the value or belief system that I have, which is in Christ Jesus, period. So you can't allow for one and not the other. And that's what we see. And our school boards are all pushing this ideology. They're waving LGBTQ flags in school instead of the American flag. They're creating a culture that makes it, that's basically turning the kids from a grade school, a middle school, high school, and especially college level into anti-American activists. They're making it trendy to hate your country and to retell history from a skewed point of view to try to get people to join along with you. And they act like they're rebels with this cause that's good, but they're fighting for their own enslavement. They're fighting to take away their freedoms. The one that gets me the biggest one that I find the funniest is the one after October 7th and all that occurred, and you saw all the anti-Semitic gang rallies taking places across the Poison Ivy colleges across the entirety of the country, and you seen them marching down the streets of New York with big banners that say Queers for Palestine. And I just think to myself, how antithetical can you get?
How'd you get to that point?
I mean, let's just send them there and see if they feel the same way. Once that culture, you know, reveals to them how they really feel about what they are and who they are.
I think that's a perfect example, by the way, of the war on truth. Right. So, you know, we live in a day and age where there is no more objective moral truth. If you believe the current regime, if you believe the current culture and what they're teaching in schools, mm-hmm. there is no more objective morality. It's my truth. And you know what? This is my truth, and you don't have a right to judge me. You don't have a right to say these things because that's your truth. Keep your truth to yourself. And
exactly right.
The problem with this is that without any type of objective morality, without any type of objective standard, just to make sure that everybody, you know, and I'm not trying to allude that anybody doesn't know anything, but a lot of people, when I say objective, they're like, oh, what's that? So an objective moral standard is something that exists outside of us. In this case, I can justify my morality because my morality is not based in humanity. My morality is based on the word of God, and it's based on God and his word. And so because of that, I can justify why murder is wrong. Because of that, I can justify why greed is seen as sinful, right? There's all of these things. Well, anyways, you get rid of that, and all of a sudden, well, we can redefine what murder is. So all of a sudden, abortion is no longer considered murder. Mm-hmm. You know, taking a life out of convenience is no longer seen as murdered. At least that's my truth.
Right? Unless you're an Arizona rancher protecting your own property.
Right.
In the onslaught of illegal armed immigrants, and then you're still sitting in prison today.
And here's some good news and bad news. So the good news is that America has only fallen by one step. That's it. One step. And that one step is that our government, sorry, I'm trying to get the camera back into focus here. Our government has forgotten that there is a power greater than itself. Mm. Now, the bad news is that it's a giant step. But if I can be of any encouragement to anybody here today, our nation has only fallen by one step. It's just a giant step. But our government has forgotten. Why do you think there is such a push to take God out of everything? You know, and for whatever reason, you talk to people about God-given and inalienable rights. You talk to people about the scripture and God's word and the fact that the laws of our land were based on scripture. You talk about that, and all of a sudden you turn into this Christian nationalist, which I don't even know what the heck that means, but you turn into some Christian nationalist that wants a theocracy. And I got news for you. Our constitutional republic was based on scripture.
So, based on a Judeo-Christian point of view,
our own Savior Jesus Christ actually fought against the religious or the government theocracy.
Yes, he did
at the time. And so, mm-hmm. we live in a day and age where people are willing to rewrite history. They're willing to forget their history. And because our schools are controlled by our government, our kids are learning the wrong history. So we're teaching the wrong history. And, you know, Malcolm X said this, several decades ago, that he who controls the media controls the masses. And, you know, and you can take that as also the schools. He who controls our learning institutions, which they're not really educational institutions, they're indoctrinational institutions, but he who controls those.
You have a good point right there.
He said, beware of the white liberal too. that was another statement by Malcolm X.
So I kind of wanted to correct a little bit of what you said there, or at least offer a different way of saying it, is that you said that they're teaching the wrong history in school. I think that the objectives that the teachers have and what our government has had is to teach the history that they're teaching, and it's to help enact this communist revolution, this cultural communist revolution that we're currently experiencing. Yeah. So it's not that they're teaching the wrong history. Like, to us, it's the wrong history, but to them, their objective is working out perfectly because they're not inspiring kids to be free, patriotic Americans. They are inspiring them to be Marxists that hate the founding of this country, that hate our founding fathers because they own slaves. And they don't teach them, you know, that they were born into slavery and that they were one of the first, or I'll say they were the first nation in the world to declare that all men are created equal and that our government is here to protect and preserve and recognize our rights as opposed to infringing on them at every turn. And it just the idea, the separate idea that our rights stem from God and not from man-made agreements and that man-made governments are there to preserve and recognize the our rights. There's so many times where I bring up to people our God-given rights and they have a fundamental misunderstanding of it because they just think, oh, the spaghetti, you believe in the spaghetti monster in the sky and that's where your rights come from. Or they say, you know, which God is it that you get your rights from? And it's like, that's not the point. I literally couldn't explain to this guy that outside of mankind, our rights are there. We have rights because we exist. And the fact that our government has forgotten that and has convinced the people that our rights are agreements between man that they get to take away. The scariest part is the fact that they're now to the point where they are having people advocate to have the government's infringe on your rights because they believe that they're not actually rights. They're just agreements that we allow you to have. That's why
your words are murdering people as we speak right now, Maurice. As we speak right now, you have committed so many thought crimes and microaggressions in that little speech.
You know, there's a great movie that I would definitely recommend. Well, actually, so far there's two movies and there's a third one that's coming, I believe. But you can find them on, give me a second here, Salem Now. And the first one is called Uncle Tom. And the second one is Uncle Tom 2. But I highly, highly, highly recommend both of those documentaries. Uncle Tom 2 actually goes into the infiltration of Marxism into our culture and into our government. You know, in that kind of thing, you know, we're talking about this the other day whenever we were having a conversation, y'all, is that one of my biggest pet peeves right now with so-called patriots, and I like to call them sunshine patriots, is they like to be patriotic whenever times are good. But then whenever it comes time, excuse my French here, when it comes time to do patriot shit, they're nowhere to be found.
Exactly.
So
here's another kind, though. And these are the people that I encounter out here where I'm at. And even people inside who actually have positions in the Republican Party in the committees, they take both positions and they do it so masterfully when they speak. So it never seems that they disagree with either side. And so they actually advocate for you to ride the fence,
especially in the church, especially in the church,
I've gone, I think when we were talking, I told you about this. But I went into the United Methodist Church and I confronted them on their theology because they're ordaining members of the LGBTQ community and they're allowing them to teach Sunday school. They're allowing them to preach all of these things. And I'm like, they're saying, well, it's not up to you to judge. I said, you're wrong. You don't know your scripture. Turn to Corinthians 5:12. It tells me to judge my brothers. And I'm here to tell you this is wrong and get back to scripture. And a little while longer into the same conversation, they told me that homosexuality wasn't a sin and that the Bible was 2,000 years old. And I said, both wrong. But I see you're not a church anymore. This is not a church. You're not here to preach the will of God. You guys have a separate agenda and you're putting a new face on God. You're creating your own God.
Yeah, it's a God of convenience, and, you know, and it's just like patriotism out of convenience. You know, here's the thing that is a huge pet peeve of mine, and I just to a degree I somewhat understand where people are at, and I think it's a lack of maturity and growth. And I'm not talking about necessarily maturity in life or as a spouse or you know as whatever your career is, but just but to some degree it is a level of maturity where we have a lot of conservatives in this country that there's no resolve, right? There's no resilience. Actually, that is a big word that God put on my heart over the last year, is that word resilience. And it continues to be at the forefront of everything that I say and do. I remember just after 2020, you know, whenever we saw the 2020 election not go the way that it was supposed to have gone, right? And I don't know what platforms is being streamed on, so I'm trying to be careful.
Careful, we're on YouTube.
Yeah. So I remember some of the mandates that came out, right? I remember in 2022 seeing how some of the elections in 2022 went, including my own, and just seeing some what appeared to be hardcore patriots just give up and say, you know what, I'm not voting until they fix this election, or I'm not voting again until X, Y, and Z, or you know what, I'm done because nothing's going to change, right? They're just black-pilled. Right. My problem with that, and again, this is where I think there's a lack of maturity. My problem with that is 100 years ago, the Marxists were in a place where they were just happy to get whatever small victory that they could. And what they did was they exercised the principle of incrementalism. So it's gotten to the point where our nation has changed and evolved so subtly over the last 100 years that the mainstream hasn't even noticed.
Yeah.
But what they do though is they take their victories. You know, they've had more defeats, but they just continue to take those victories. And now you fast forward to 2024. I mean, we're very, very close to being full-blown communist. Our constitutional republic is soaked in piss right now. The Constitution is soaked in piss right now, and they're on the verge of winning. And so what I try to encourage people to do is say, look, it's time to use their tactics against them. You're expecting, for example, President Trump to come in and save the day when constitutionally he can't do that, right? He's not a savior. He's not Jesus. If we're going to take this country back, it's going to be because of us. Remember, consent of the governed. And so if we're going to take this country back, it's going to be because of each and every one of us stepping up to do our part. And we've got to be okay with also employing the principle of incrementalism. Let's use their tactics against them. And and eventually we will overcome. But we have to have that resilience. We have to have that resolve. And we cannot allow ourselves to be so beaten down and defeated that we just give up and pretend that everything is okay and we plug back into the matrix. We can't do that.
They need to pay attention to the fear that is being that's being shown from the left. I mean, listen.
Oh, yeah.
Leslie Wolf resigned. Mitt Romney's resigning. All these people, they're leaving politics for a reason. They know that, you know, redemption is coming. And when they keep talking about this big revenge and how Trump shouldn't worry, but yes, he should worry about these people have utilized and used their positions that weaponized the DOJ. They've gone so far as to go after the president's lawyer. And take documents out of his lawyer's home in order to get evidence on him. They violated his Fourth Amendment rights by searching Mar-a-Lago. I mean, they didn't go in with, we're looking for this document in this area or whatever. It was a general warrant. And they didn't even allow the lawyers or anyone that was there to accompany them to the rooms where they were searching to see what they were searching for, because the warrant didn't spell out such things. These things are illegal, but people don't know it, and perception is power. So when they think that, it's just like when the police pull you over, and I love the police officers. I love them to death. Don't get me wrong, right? But I'll use this as an example. It's like when they pull you over and they say, where are you coming from? Where are you going? None of your business. It's not, it's that simple. It's what did I do? Why did you pull me over? There are rules. That
good little note. Don't talk to police.
there are rules though that come with you know, being someone in authority or in power, you are subject to the rights of the people that you're serving. And you can't cross that line. But they've done it so masterfully over, like you said, incrementally over a long period of time. The frog is now boiling in the water and we don't realize it because they just turn the heat up a little bit at a time. And they really think that being safe means taking rights away, but that's okay. I remember after 9/11 when the Patriot Act and Victory Act and all that started coming out, people were like, well, what are you scared of? You got something to hide? Like, that's not the point. The point is my electronic communications, the things that I'm doing are my business. That's the point. We live in a free society. My government is not my mommy and daddy, right? We're building data centers at an alarming rate across this land. I mean, at an alarming rate. And when Obama came into power, after the Edward Snowden incident and that sort of thing that kind of, you know, forced them to show their hand, he created a law that said they will only keep a 2-year tail of your electronic communication on you. So all your text messages, your emails, your social, whatever it is, right? 2 years of an electronic trail. Well, how is it that you can make a law that is unconstitutional? You can't. You're not allowed to read my text messages, emails, and all that without a warrant. So saying you made a law that allows you to do it does still not make it so. It's the same way like when he made the law that Congress is no longer allowed to insider trade. Like, hold up. Congress is still, you know, they're still citizens too, and insider trading is illegal.
Hey, you want me to make you feel old really quick? Is that when the Patriot Act passed, I was in second grade.
I think I've got the grayest hair here, so.
No, I got you.
Maybe I was in fourth grade.
77.
I was in fourth grade. I lied. I was in fourth grade. Sorry.
Yeah, real quick, though, before we get back into it, I'm going to play a word from our sponsors. We'll come right back.
Military use when they need unlimited power during critical missions. Civilians like you can now get their hands on the exact same technology within 24 hours for pennies on the dollar. Folks, as a former infantry soldier, I can tell you this is the best and cheapest way to get reliable, unlimited energy. And no, I'm not talking about regular generators or the expensive solar panels. You don't have to be an electrician to do it. There's no maintenance needed. It doesn't take up a lot of space. And the best part, you won't need to rely on the power grid anymore. Click below now and hit play.
There it is, guys. So the link for that, Operation Blackout, all the rest of the guys who sponsor us are all in the description. Go down there, go through it. We have a million different companies down there with a bunch of products. And that's how you can support the podcast. And also, don't forget, the patriotsprayer.locals.com. Every Friday, Maurice and I will be doing a podcast that will be on the Locals exclusively. So if you want to join the Tribe of Patriots, go there, join up, become a member, and we look forward to it. Seeing you there. Back into this, though. So we were talking a bit about how government kind of overreaches and how people don't seem to question it because they're the government. Therefore, they're in charge and they can't be questioned. And we've kind of forgotten, you know, as a country, what freedom is, how we are literally the guys that are supposed to hold them accountable, that they work for us. Like, all of these things have become talking points that people have gotten numb to because the people who do use that kind of language are doing it from a perspective of being, for lack of a better term, criminals or radicals, right? The radicals on the left love to use, BLM used all this same terminology. So when someone who's using it, who actually has the right to use it, who actually is standing up for something that is true and good, you seem to be using the same talking points as radicals and those things. So you kind of get looked at that way. And I think that's the way our media portrays it to people. And that's the next point, right? I think the Cash Patel said this the other day, and I was like, yes. someone gets it. The media needs to be investigated badly. We need to figure out who is who, who's paying who, why these guys are ignoring things and elevating other stories, suppressing others. We saw what happened at Twitter when Elon Musk bought Twitter and went in and removed all those government agencies out of it, and how they had ex-FBI agents over there, Jim Baker and the rest, operating back pages, shutting down President Trump's Twitter page and many more like it, because they didn't want certain narratives, certain questions to be asked. And it's the same thing going on over at other broadcast companies. I'm sure if you go to ABC, NBC, CBS, and you do the same type of investigative work that you did at Twitter, I guarantee you, you will see government influence in the media. And it's terrible because it seems to be aimed at one side of the political aisle, and it's way less than honest. And you can usually tell that they're all reading from the same script. It doesn't matter what news broadcast you're watching. The catchphrases are the same. After the election, it was the big lie. If you know, it was all of these same catchphrases, all read by people who seem to be receiving their orders from the same place. When you get into Congress, and I have absolute faith in the fact that you're going to get there. Can we count on you to go after these guys, look into them? And also, my biggest pet peeve is Section 230. We need that gone.
Yeah. So absolutely. But here's the thing. I want to reiterate something that I said, you know, at the very beginning, is that, you know, I myself, I'm going to be one voice amongst 435. If the American people don't step up and they don't elect people to help, then, you know, there's not really a whole lot that I can do. And this is why I say that our representatives, they're not our saviors. I'm not running to be your savior. Right. Only the American people can fix this, not the government. We can't trust the government to fix a problem that it actually created, right?
Right.
That's not going to happen. Government's not the answer to the problem. Government is
right.
The problem. So as much as I could do, the most effective thing that I think that I can do, there's three main things. Number one is I will vote down every single bad piece of legislation. Every single, you know, my job as a representative in 2024 is not to create new laws. It is to stand between these bad bills and my constituents. That means any bill that increases spending, any bill that increases government, and any bill that violates the Constitution of the United States in any way, shape, form, or fashion. So that's the first thing. Second thing.
That's almost all of them.
Exactly. Second thing is we don't need new laws. So why write new legislation? Because we're not enforcing the laws that are already on the books. So here's the thing, is that I want to make sure that we enforce the laws that are already on the books, which then leads to the third thing, which is to repeal the bad laws.
But here's the thing. Federal laws that need to be repealed.
Oh yeah. 16th and 17th Amendment come to mind right now. Here's the thing is that
ratified to begin with, Jameson. The 16th Amendment was never ratified. How in the hell it's alive and well right now is beyond me.
Well, the 16th Amendment would actually solve 80 to 90% of all the problems that we're having. If we could get that repealed and we had the fair tax, not really.
I love that idea.
A flat tax is better than what we got, but I much prefer a fair tax.
Yeah, because otherwise we're going after people. We're penalizing people for doing well in life. That's it.
Yeah. Well, there's several other reasons, like the fact that a fair tax actually untaxes income. It untaxes all forms of federal income. And what leads to that, it's so beneficial for the economy. I mean, right there. I mean, we're growing the economy right off the bat because people will save more because you untax savings. People are going to save more. You're going to see more people borrow because of interest rates are going to be so low. There's a whole slew of benefits, and we can definitely talk about that. But at the end of the day, I can't do any of that by myself. right? So, I mean, I can go and into the halls of Congress and I can make a scene like Chip Roy. I can make a scene and I can say and do all the right things, but you know what? I don't fault Chip Roy for not getting a whole lot done. And the reason why is because what's he supposed to do whenever he's the voice of a minority? Him or Matt Gaetz, they're the voice of a minority. Thomas Massie, the voice of a minority, right? And we're not talking about minority Republican Democrat. Just because you have an R next to your name doesn't make you a conservative, doesn't make you a constitutionalist. If anything, it makes you maybe a rhinocrat, right? It's uniparty, right? But we need Republicans. If you're going to run as a Republican, actually be a Republican and stand on the things that you say you're going to stand on. If you're going to take an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States, then by golly, you better uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States. The only way this happens, the only way, is enough, not all, but enough of the American people have to stop being sunshine patriots and summer soldiers. They've got to be willing to get involved, do something, and make sure we are electing the right people to office so that we can finally start to get some of this stuff done. And second thing is we need to make sure that the remaining states that are needed for an Article 5 convention of states, we need to try to make sure that we can advocate and do as much as we can for that Article 5 convention of states. But those are the only two ways at this point that I see that we're going to be able to restore America, because there's no saving it. We have to restore it.
Yeah, I find it hard to, like, can you imagine, like, even Maurice, can you imagine with the things that we say and we believe, and we're sitting in a line, right? And we're in the Capitol, and I'm two chairs away from Jamie Raskin when he starts just, and how do you get up and shake that man's hand? And just, some of the things these people do are so snake in the grass. They're so wrong. They're on their face anti-American. They lie. Like Adam Schiff, I would find it very hard to be around him, like physically be around him and not just want to shake the shit out of the guy. Just.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of what we have in as representatives right now need to be just gone. But what you said, Jameson, really early in this podcast, I was kind of thinking about as you were saying this, and that was when it was 2020 during the government lockdowns, and when you felt a calling that you actually answered that, right? Not instantly, but you recognized that. I mean, it almost seems like before 2020, before the government lockdowns, before that drastic action, there was a lot of reasons that we could almost feel complacent, right? Or distracted, that we were actually in the matrix, right? And when 2020 happened, it shook a lot of people up, and a lot of people answered that calling. And right now, what we're trying to do, it seems, is we're trying to wake the rest of the people up needed in order to restore this country. I like that you say that, to restore it, not just save it, restore it.
Yeah.
But one of the things that, I mean, because back in 2020, that's kind of what I felt. I saw a lot of men that I respect bow to the mandates, and they didn't question the authority. And it was a lot of men that I respected. And I was like, wow, we are in a lot worse off position than I ever would have thought that we were. And it woke me up to the fact that this could actually go sideways. I mean, that our country could falter. It was like having, this is going to sound funny, but like it's when you're a kid and you finally realize that Santa Claus isn't real, right? It's kind of like this whole idea of what's in your head comes crashing down, right? Well, America, you know, I mean, I've always been very patriotic, but, you know, I was also young and naive, and I kind of had this idea that, like, America can never fall. It can't collapse. We're the greatest country on earth. No way. Not going to happen. You know, until something like that, when the government lockdowns happened over a virus that had a 99.98% survival rate, and they locked everything down. And that was under Trump's presidency. It's like there's three branches of government that people really need to understand. There are three equal branches of government, and there's many layers to government. And so when the governors and we're all locking states down the way that they did, I mean, that to me, it shook me. It shook me to my core. And I know that there's so many more people out there that are feeling that calling that haven't answered it yet, that haven't felt the need, or they've been convinced that they don't have the power to do anything. You, an everyday American, decided to run for Congress. And I mean, the spending difference between you and Dan Crenshaw was, I mean, how big was that difference?
Yeah, it was over a couple million. Because so just so that everybody knows, the second time that we ran, because I didn't get to get this far in the story, and so, but second time that we ran, we took over 40% of the vote with less than $30,000.
That's awesome.
And isn't that absolutely incredible? That I mean, you came within 9 points of Dan Crenshaw, and only spending $30,000, and I mean. People, we have more power than we realize. And like what Jameson was saying earlier, is the fact that we're the ones with the power. And the government has just convinced a lot of the populace that they get to dictate it because they have the money to throw around. And they're getting money thrown at them. So they feel like they're the important big guys that get to tell us what to do. That was one of the main things that really bugged me about the government lockdowns in 2020, was the fact that they said, it was infuriating how they got to tell us you have to wear your mask here and here and here. And maybe, you know, we'll be free by summer or by Independence Day. I was like, this is some, I mean, I can't get over the government lockdowns of 2020. I don't think I ever will be able to, because it was so over the line. And I mean, more people need to wake up. And if you have to remember 2020, go ahead and do that. But I'll tell you what, hell is a long way down, and it can get a lot worse.
Well, I remember walking into T-Mobile one time, and there were a couple, like I refused to wear my mask. There were a couple of ladies in there that were T-Mobile reps, and they were talking about the different styles of mask and the different print and everything else. And I looked at them and I was like, why is this so important to you, the graphic that you have on your mask? And they're like, oh, honey, this is the new normal. You literally had people believing that we were going to be living with masks on our face on a daily basis, just like they do in China, right?
China.
So
very China-centric.
You know, and I'm just like, no, this ain't the new normal. This ain't the new normal. But you had a lot of people that were convinced that this was going to be the new normal.
What was that right there? That's a different thing, but yeah.
I know. Yeah. Sorry, I just saw it. I had to bring it up.
He didn't see it. I don't think he caught it. So have you followed this at all? I mean, you'd have to be under a rock to not at least heard about it. So P. Diddy, I hate even saying that name, Diddy. They've been saying for years, this guy is a little off, fruity, whatever. Right. And, there are a lot of rumors going around that he did some pretty awful things, to people and blackmailing and so forth. He ended up paying his ex $30 million to keep her quiet. But a lot of these parties that he was having that people are pointing to and saying, hey, that was the issue. There were a lot of elected officials at those parties.
Didn't Diddy supposedly diddle dudes?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That is
diddle dudes.
Thought. That's why they called him the
Diddy Diddle. Diddy Diddle. If Diddy Diddle.
He's the P Diddler now.
He did. Jameson, before. I don't know when we're wrapping this up, but before we get out of here, I needed to ask you this, because it seems that, man, I can't remember the exact wording that you said, but he said the founding fathers put their life on the line. They made an oath to.
They pledged yes. to each other their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor.
how many representatives in government do you think would even mouth that pledge? Or, I mean, I would like to say how many could actually mean it, but I know that they're like, when they're sworn in, they mouth it, but how many do you think actually mean it, or are there any?
I mean, I do think there are a few. Not everybody.
Can you give us a name? Even two names. Can you give us two names that of people that you feel that way about?
Yeah, so I do believe, now I might catch some hate for this because MAGA absolutely hates him, but I do think that Chip Roy is one of those people. I Thomas Massey, another one. I actually love Thomas
Massey. I like Thomas Massey. He's made some mistakes. He's human. He did some things I disagree with. The only thing about Chip Roy that I had a problem with was his backing of DeSantis.
Well, but he has a right to do that. I mean, right? He has a right to do that. Yeah, that has nothing to do with how he votes in Congress.
Yeah, I mean, I can't go at him on his legislation. I can't. I just, you know, that whole situation with DeSantis, it just angered me because I was like, here's an unbeatable ticket, Trump DeSantis. Like, it would have changed everything. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It would have. I mean, there would have been no stopping it. It would have been a freight train, just forward momentum would have been Trump for four more, unbeatable, and DeSantis for eight. Who the hell got in his ear on the offside? It says, hey, do this and kill all opportunity of, you know, this movement that you could have been a part of, and then have people back him. I'm like, I didn't get that. I didn't understand that.
I think, and there's several other good congressmen that I'm looking forward to working alongside should I be elected. But one that I can definitely say that I've come to greatly admire is Eli Crane. Eli Crane is freaking awesome. In the Senate, man, I can't say enough good things about Rand Paul. And not just because I was a fan of his dad.
I was more than a fan of his dad. His dad was a rock star to me. Like,
oh yeah,
that guy taught me everything I know about monetary policy. And all, I mean, he was the only one who ever sold out Madison Square Gardens to give a speech for president. They wronged him. He should have been the nominee and not Mitt Romney.
Now you do have a lot of good legislators that are voting correctly. At least what I would consider to be correctly on legislation, but they might not necessarily know why, or the reason why may not necessarily be the same reason why I would. So as a constitutionalist, I'm very, very staunch on the role of a limited government in within a constitutional jurisdiction. If the government is operating outside of that jurisdiction, then that legislation has no business even being submitted, or much less voted on or passed. It's just so. But yeah, those are a few people that I would say, especially Eli Crane. I left out Eli Crane a little earlier on in our conversation, but Eli Crane is somebody that I've really come to admire. And
Let me tell you something that we just found out. We had an interview with some ladies out in Cedar City, and they're fighting to get their high school renamed back to Redmond, right? I don't know if you saw the podcast, but we were in, I'm doing my regular, you know, due diligence prior to the podcast, figuring out who's who and where they served. And I'm listening to this, you know, they did this meeting where they got caught on hot mics, or I don't know if they realized they were on, or they just didn't care. But they literally were talking about taking their initiative from SUUs, the university, to the school board level. And what we figured out is that at the SUU level, the same people that were there were people involved with the Confucius Institute, which was just renamed to the Helen Foster Foundation. It is exactly still the Confucius Institute. There's no difference. It just got a different name. And these people are all associated with it through the university down to the school board level. And this is where they're sending their money in and going in and culturally cleansing the way they're doing. Get rid of the red men. You know, they call them now the Reds. Like, you know, now it's okay because they're the Reds, which is more of a communist kind of a stance, you know, kind of a name. That's how I look at it. I mean, just look at what they did to the Redskins. They changed them to the Commies or the Commanders. It seemed to have a theme whenever they replaced a Native American thing. This is the theme, but it seems to be coming. We are being influenced by people that are sending money into our country from other countries.
It's all made up BS. Yeah, right. This whole cultural appropriation BS with Native cultures. It's BS. You know, whenever, you know, I don't know if y'all have seen, like, whenever there are people that do man on the street interviews, and you can insert whatever culture. It could be Latino culture, it could be Native culture, it could be Black culture, what have you. But you just go talk to people that are outside the bounds of all of the woke BS. They're like, no, I don't take offense to that. Why would I? Like, it's actually offensive that they think it's offensive to me that they can make that decision for me. It's actually offensive that they were honoring my people by naming a team after my people, or by having a syrup bottle that actually honored, you know what I mean? So when you talk to the regular, average, everyday citizen out there, to whatever culture that is supposedly being culturally appropriated, they have a completely different view than what the mainstream pushes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it usually ends up putting a lot of people out of work within those cultures. And I mean, not to be funny or anything, but the little people, it was a big deal out here in Vegas where I'm at, right? They used to do this thing where they would allow people to toss them against Velcro walls. The companies were owned and operated by the little people. And yet these people came along and fought very hard through legislation and got rid of all these companies. And these people were the ones who owned them. So it wasn't like you were taking a shot at them or whatever. It wasn't, it was not anything negative. It was meant to be fun. But this political correctness has just eroded to a point where we can't do that anymore. Comedians can't even do a stand-up act before they, poll the room. I'm getting ready to tell this joke. Is anyone going to get offended before I proceed? You know, that sort of thing. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Hey, Eddie, check the private chat. I can't actually see. Oh, I can't actually see the video to pull up, but I wanted to play the Smoking Gun Coffee ad. Really quick, because I know that.
Yeah, let's get the guys.
give them a shout out.
Give them a shout out. There it is.
Yeah.
Greetings, kindred spirits. Welcome to Smoking Gun Coffee, where the essence of the land infuses every sip. It carries the spirit of reverence for the earth and its gifts. As you indulge in our carefully crafted blends, envision the dance of the winds and the whispers of ancient trees. Let each cup be a journey through time, a tribute to the harmony found in nature. Smoking Gun Coffee, a ritual of warmth, a connection to the sacred. Embrace the rich tapestry of flavors and join us in honoring the legacy of the land. Taste the spirit, savor the journey. Smoking Gun Coffee, where every cup is a celebration of our shared connection.
You know, I'm gonna try to figure out a great way to, like, end that. Eddie's been bugging me for 2 months now to finish that the ad there.
I just want to put something on the end of it, right?
Yeah. You know what?
Off right away like that.
You know, I should have my wife drive my truck. I'll take the top off and I'll just be standing on the back drinking coffee, you know, something like that. I don't know. Want to do something fun.
You know what? Hey, listen, guys, I said it a little earlier, but I would ask this of anyone watching right now, Jeannie, Taruk Makto, Ace gotten that from the movie, Avatar. I just realized where your name came from. So, Cordell, guys, do us the favor, and anyone else watching right now, go over to our Rumble page at rumble.com/The Patriots Prayer and throw a thumbs up on the podcast for us. Just comment on it. It's how that Rumble channel grows and how we get seen. And it's so important. As much as we love X And we do because it's how we communicate with so many of you. But X is not the way that we are going to grow as podcasters. And actually, it's not going to hit our bottom line until Elon Musk makes some adjustments that allows for creators to benefit more off of their content. So guys, please do us a favor and go over to the Rumble page and like, follow, subscribe there. Throw a thumbs up on the video. We'd really appreciate that.
And there, one of the best ways to figure out where all of our links are is if you go to the patriotsprayer.com. We have all the links of what we're on. It has all of our sponsors on there. So that way, if you ever, and plus there's Patriot Prayer merch as well. So welcome back, Jameson.
Thank you. No, I don't want to break the fourth wall or anything, but just so that y'all know, whenever I was on Timcast on Tim Pool, so I had for the first 40, 45 minutes, people were like, well, why is Jameson being so quiet? And of course, I find this out after the show, right? And I'm like, I had to go bad. So I texted my driver, really good dude named Chris. I texted him. I was like, hey, am I supposed to let somebody know that I got to go to the bathroom? And he's like, no, just get up and go. And he's like, they'll fix your screen. Well, they didn't. So you see me get up and walk out and go into the bathroom back there, and you see me walk back out, and I'm just like. But then after that, it was like I was all good to go. But anyways, there's fun little story. That's why I was quiet for the first 45 minutes, because I was trying to concentrate so I didn't urinate on myself.
You know, what are those guys like off camera? I mean, I've seen
them. They're solid.
They're just exactly who they are on camera.
100%.
And I get that exact feeling from them. It seems like, you know, he's just really being himself. I mean,
yeah. What's up, Woody? Sorry. I just want to say hi to Woody. He's we interact quite a bit on X.
Yeah, his name was bothering the hell out of me. I'm like, why do I know that? It's not a native name, Taruk Makto. Like, no, that's from Avatar. That's like the name of the guy when he becomes an avatar, becomes the leader or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, guys, yeah. Do us a favor, go check us out on Rumble and that sort of thing. You got an event coming up. You were talking about this Flint event. Tell us about what's going on and where it's happening and what time and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, first and foremost, let me say that if you're in the greater Houston area on May 23rd, which is a Thursday, but May 23rd from 4 p.m. to 10 p.m., come out to Texas Flint Fest. And you can go to TexasFlintFest.com to get all of the juicy details. But basically, General Flynn's team had reached out to me, and he's doing a tour for his new movie that's called Flynn Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. And it's basically a documentary that's documenting not only his career, but also, you know, he's exposing the corruption, where the bodies are buried, and that's why, right, he's been so heavily politically persecuted.
He was the only one that Obama told Trump not to keep, yep, for that very reason.
And so they're doing the tour right now as we speak. Well, they weren't coming to the greater Houston area, and so I told them, I was like, look, I'll take point on this for you. And so they allowed me to take the reins, take point. It turns out, I think, that our event, Texas Flint Fest in Spring, Texas, is the final location for the tour, I think. There were a couple of other places, I think, in Mississippi they were going to hit, but I think they may have fallen through. I'm not entirely sure, but... But yeah, so we want to do this up big. We want to show up for General Flynn in a big way. It's a little crazy because that's the same weekend as the Texas Republican Convention in San Antonio. But you know what I've been telling people is that, look, you're already engaged and involved. This ain't for you. Like, I mean, definitely come, right? But my focus, man, my focus is not the party. My focus is the people. You know, like I said in the beginning, I'm not a party loyalist, right? My loyalty is to God first and then the Constitution. And so my heartbeat has been to engage the disengaged and to wake up those that are asleep and to get and to involve the uninvolved, right? That's my heart. And so that's really who we're wanting to do this for. There are a lot of patriots in the greater Houston, in the state of Texas, a lot of patriots that are just feeling defeated. They're feeling like nothing that we do matters, but they're still patriots. And so they'll come to Texas Flynn Fest. But what, here's what will wind up happening is we'll wind up getting them engaged in some way, shape, form, or fashion. Many times with them not even realizing that we're getting them involved and getting them engaged. But we do everything that we can to try to do community engagement, patriotic community engagement. That's basically what my company, Project Defiant, that's basically what we're all about. So if you really want to learn more about Project Defiant, you can go to projectdefiant.com. Or if you want to learn more about the event, go to texasflynnfest.com.
Yeah, and I wish I could get over there for something like that. When is it?
May 23rd. It's a Thursday.
May 23rd.
Yeah, and I'll just throw this out there. That's 2 days before my birthday.
There you go.
I get that PTO time in May. Who knows? I've been wanting the Texas trip. We'll be going out the following month as well for another deal that Maurice and I are looking at doing, and that's in Detroit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll be going out to Michigan too.
Yeah. See, guys, we don't really,
details on that later.
we're not always right here. We're doing things and we're actually engaged. We don't just always armchair quarterback, right? But yes.
Yeah. Only after we work all day.
Yeah. Yeah. But here's the goal, right? So, and then we tell our guys this all the time. That's the locals page, right? We did a Newsmax interview a couple weeks back. And after that, people looked into us, and I got a call for someone offering us a TV show. And the TV, we're like, oh, cool. We're like thrown back. Like, they want to give us a TV show. That's awesome. And I talked to Maurice about it initially, and we ended up waiting a solid day before we talked to him about where we wanted to go with it after that. And in that day, I'm so glad I took that day, because in that day, I was allowed myself some time to think about it. And we talked about it, and they wanted to give us 10% of all the revenues for subscriptions that came in based on us moving to their platform. We're like, why in the hell would we give them 90% of the people who want to watch us? Why would we give them 90% of their money? So what we said we'll do, why don't we just do this on our own? So we created our locals page, and it's really insignificant amount of money. It's $5 per month for anyone that goes over to the patriotsprayer.locals.com. We want to make sure it wasn't going to break anyone's bank. I didn't even want it noticeable, but we want to be able to travel and go to DC and sit down across from a congressperson and have that interview. And we want to be out there and doing this for real. I love what I do for a living currently, but this is what both of us want to do. So when we get, when we have propelled ourselves up to that stature, and that's exactly what we're doing. We're working our way out of our day jobs into doing this on a permanent basis. And we love the guys because we had a bunch of guys jump right over and start supporting us. And we know who you are. And thank you so much for that, because it really does. It helps quite a bit. And we work, 50 plus hours a week at our regular jobs. And then we do this. And so by the time it's all said and done, we put in a good 13, 14 hour day. And it's, and our families, God bless them, stand by us. And they're like, eventually you guys better make some damn money. That's all I can,
Yeah.
We're in it for the cause, right? We're in there trying to fight the good fight. The wives are like, that's all good and fine, but when are you going to make some money?
And also pay attention to me.
Yeah, pay attention to me. So guys, yep. It's coming. It's coming. And we can't wait for the day that this is what we wake up to and this is what we're doing. And in 8 hours a day, because I tell you what, it's going to be amazing. And it's coming. I believe it'll be coming within the next year or so. You know, and I can't wait to see you rise to the heights of being a congressman. And a lot of you guys that are fighting the fights that you are engaged in, I couldn't imagine having that kind of weight on my shoulders. And I really respect those of you who want to take it on for the right reasons. And I believe that you're doing it for the right reasons. And, you know, my prayers will, you know, I do pray, literally pray for my country. And that's why the show is called The Patriot's Prayer. I mean, this is what it's about. It's about me and us now asking God to help make our country what it was intended to be. And, you know, and that happens with grassroots movement like yourself, like Jerome Davis, like my buddy Damon Galdo and Nate Kane and a lot of these American First guys that are out there fighting the good fight against.
And hopefully light a fire up under, you know, other people's other patriots to listen to I guess the sense of patriotic duty or righteous duty that they've been ignoring. And, you know, I mean, it's one of the reasons why I enjoyed this conversation with you so much is that, I mean, you're helping inspire people and you're not just saying that, you're doing it as well. You know, you're taking on Dan Crenshaw or took on, you know, and got within 9 points of Dan Crenshaw. And, you know, it sounds like there's no stopping. Regardless, it's like you're making more and more steps each time you take crack at it. So,
well, yeah. And just to throw this out there, because I am running again in 26. So I'd also like to encourage everyone to go to jamesonellis.com. You can actually scroll all the way down to the webpage and put in your name and email address. If you want to follow what we're doing, you want to hear from me on a regular basis. But here's the thing that I want to throw out there, because this can sound kind of scary to some people, but for me, patriotism, it's not something that I am or something that I do. It's a patriot is who I am. And so that can sound scary to some people because they think it means that, well, you know, does that mean you have to be a patriot 24/7? Yes, it does. But what does that look like? See, everybody can do something. We can all do something. We can, for some of us, it's serving in our local church. For some of us, it's becoming a Constitution coach with the Patriot Academy and creating these small groups and taking people through biblical citizenship and modern America or Constitution Alive or Foundations of Freedom, right? For some, it's running for office. Maybe it's running for school board, right? But this has to be something that we immerse ourselves in to the extent where it compels us. And here's the thing. If you can't be compelled, there was something that I heard a long time ago that says that pain pushes you until you have a vision that's big enough to pull you. What is that pain in your life that's willing to push you into action until that pain, you no longer depend on that pain to push you, but because you have a vision that's actually pulling you, that's getting you up early, that's keeping you up late. What is that thing? Everybody can do something. Don't feel like you have to take on the whole world. You don't, but everybody can do something. Make patriotism who you are, not what you do.
Damn. Beautiful. I love that. I think I'll clip that for later. That's a good thing. Say it again.
Which part?
Yeah. Make patriotism who you are, not what you do.
Yeah.
That's your campaign slogan right there. That's the one. That's the one you should use. That I've never heard it said before, but it's simplistic and it's powerful and it's true. So, yeah, a lot of people act like they're patriots, but their heart is so far away from, you know, what they act like they're, you know, they believe in or they feel, you know, like we talked about it already, 8 people did what was right when it came to the Kevin McCarthy situation. 8.
Yeah.
8.
Thank you, Leslie.
8.
And thank you, Leslie, for commenting on the Rumble channel.
Yes.
Very cool. All
that. So, guys, we're going to get out of here. Before I go, is there anything else you guys want to talk about before we hit?
No, I just want to say thank you for having me on. It's an honor and a privilege. And, you know, I'll just say this, is that I'm not rising to the ranks of Congress. I am actually lowering myself to the ranks of Congress because Congress is supposed to serve the people. So, you know, again, I'm not here to be anybody's leader or to be anybody's savior. I'm here to serve my district. And I want to encourage everybody to make sure you look at the voting records of your representatives at the state level, as in the state legislature, as well as at the federal level. Look at the voting. If you want to know where you can go, there's a couple of places I'll recommend. One is libertyscore.conservativereview.com. Hasn't been updated in about 9 or 10 months. So another place you can go is called The New American. Just do a Google search for The New American. They have what's called the Freedom Index. You can look up the voting record of your federal legislator there on The New American. They're connected to the John Birch Society. So highly recommend doing that. Make sure you're informed. It's nobody's responsibility to make sure that you're informed. So that's the beauty of self-governance. Self-governance is about self-responsibility. And that means that it's nobody else's responsibility to educate and inform you. It's our responsibility to educate and inform ourselves. So let's step up to the plate and let's do it.
Well, thank you so much. And as usual, the silent majority, you need to stop being silent and stand your ground. We'll see you next time on the Patriot's Prayer, guys. Have a good one.
My people love this country and we're under attack. They banned us, they cancel us for speaking the facts. If you man enough, come stand with us, take USA back. And every time we pull up, all you're gonna see is America.